You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I think that guy said, on your mark, get set. But the gun didn't go off yet. Because, if I were to start before the gun goes off, that's called a false start. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but before 2003, when someone had a false start, what they would do is they would reset the field. And of course, when a false start happens, the gun goes off twice, two shots. Try to stretch this. And between 2003 and 2009, before 2003, yeah, if the gun went off, it was a false start. They would just say, don't do that again. Everyone would reset. And then if you did it a second time, you'd be disqualified. You'd be done for that race. Between 2003 and 2009, they kind of changed the rules. If one person had a false start, then they would reset the field. And if anyone had a false start, that person would be disqualified, whether or not they were the first person to do it. Then after 2009, this is all according to the IAAF standards for the Olympics, etc. After that point, in 2009 forward till now, if there is if you fall start, you're done. You're disqualified. You're out for that race. And of course, the race starts on the gun. And so that's why the phrase you probably have heard, jumping the gun, that's where that comes from. It comes from starting before the false start. And I'm going to stand up before my head explodes. But a false start, a lot of runners, and they even have sensors in the foot thingies, the blocks. And they actually discovered, too, interesting fun facts, since we're talking about fun facts today. Has nothing to do with squirrels. But they determined that if someone moves 0.1, one-tenth of a second after the starting gun, that is also considered a false start, because scientists have determined that your brain can't process the sound fast enough to move 0.1 second, tenth of a second after the gun goes off. So that means you actually started before the gun went off. And so it's very interesting. But a false start, you've got these athletes, you've got these runners, and of course false starts are in swimming, obviously football is part of it, but in sprinting and track and field, when you false start, you're done. You're done. You are out for that race. You lose. You are DQ'd. And so what's so interesting is that you've got this whole, and of course you're talking about sprinting. We talked about sprinting a couple months ago when I got to wear this wonderful outfit back then too. But a sprint is 10 seconds. And so every second, every tenth of a second, every hundredth of a second counts. And so you've got runners that are trying to jump the gun, not get caught, because to them the risk is worth it. The risk is worth it. But the unfortunate thing is, or the question would be, is the risk worth it? Say you spend a lifetime working your way and you finally get to the Olympics. We're coming up on an Olympic summer, right? 2024 Summer Olympics are in, where are they? Paris? Yeah, I think they're in Paris. Okay. And so you spend a lifetime getting to that point only to jump the gun, to false start, and be disqualified. And the question is that worth it? Or is it worth it to maybe just wait until the gun goes off and then move forward and then go where you're supposed to go? And, of course, running the race, running the course, whatever, whether that's a sprint, whether that's a K, 100 meter, or whatever those things are. But I want to talk about something that happens for us as followers of Jesus. Because sometimes, we've got this. I'm not going to, the race metaphor will eventually break down here. But sometimes we're God made this promise. God said this is going to happen. And I'm not talking about some weird burning bush kind of moment. I'm just saying the Bible says this, and God says he's going to care for me. God's going to provide for my needs, whatever that is. And we get to this point where that's what God said. And we're kind of lining up. And instead of waiting for God, we jump in. We false start. And in jumping ahead of God, we're disqualified for that race. I'm not saying we're done for life, but there are consequences to jumping the gun, to jumping ahead of what God is doing. And we're continuing this story of the life of Jacob, and we're on the third week now. We'll be continuing it all the way through next month. And in the first week we talked about, and we're going to come back to this in a second, but we talked about the birth of Jacob and Esau. They were twins. And how God basically said to them, you know what, culture, I know what you think culture says, but I'm not going along with culture. I don't fit into culture. I do things my way. And so he ended up saying that the younger is going to serve the older, which, again, you have to listen to that, mc3church.org/the deceiver. And you can listen to that week or watch the live stream to learn why that was so against culture and why it was such a huge deal that the older was going to serve the younger, that the younger would, the firstborn would be underneath the secondborn. And then last week we watched a video by Andy Stanley and talking about what Jacob was, or what Esau was willing to trade to hand off the birthright. And again, we don't have time to talk all about that. But basically his rights as the oldest child. And he said, no, I'm hungry. And I would rather have that bowl of stew than the birthright and all that comes with it. And so Esau traded his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob got the birthright. And Esau got a bowl of stew. That's what he got out of it. We talked about that last week. And so this week we're continuing. And the point that I want us to see is this. Is that God's purposes aren't excuses for our disobedience. Because sometimes we think, okay, God made this promise, and he's not coming through on my timeline, so I'm just going to jump the gun. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to do something so that God comes through on his promise. And again, a lot of times this isn't like because we're just bad. I mean, we are all sinners. But the fact that it's like, okay, no, I want to kind of help God out, you know? I want to give him a hand here. I want to make sure that he comes through. And in the process, we end up disobeying. In the process, we end up doing something that we shouldn't do. We end up kind of going in a direction that does not honor God so that God can come through on his promises. And so we're going to be looking at that in the story today, continuing the life of Jacob. And this, again, the series is called The Deceiver. Jacob's a jerk. Jacob is just a jerk. He everything he does is not great. And you know, today he is considered, well, literally, and we'll get to that spoiler, his name was changed to Israel because he was going to be the father of the nation of Israel. But that's this guy that we're looking at that we call the deceiver. And so I want to talk about jumping the gun here a little bit. And we'll go, at a fair pace, at a sprinter's pace, given where we are time-wise. And that's all good. But this is a story, as we continue the life of Jacob, it takes place later in his life. We're not sure. I mean, I guess we can kind of do the math and figure it out. But at this point, Isaac, his dad, is older. And actually, we'll see in a second, he's getting ready to die. He's pretty old. These guys are grown up now. Isaac and Jacob are grown men. And so that's kind of where this story takes place. So even in the Bible, in your Bible, this is Genesis 27. So if you have your paper Bibles there, you can turn to Genesis 27. We'll turn on the top row of lights there for you to follow that. Or you can go to YouVersion and work. I mean, don't swipe at all. It's Genesis right there at the top. And go to chapter 27. But it comes right after chapter 26 because that's where 27 comes when you count. And that's how that works. But it's 27 and it doesn't mean that it happens the next day. So there's some time has passed here. And we're going to see basically four little scenes. There are four episodes, mini episodes, or if this was a play or a musical, a Broadway show, this would be where the curtain would kind of come down, something would happen backstage, then the curtain would open again for the next scene. So we're looking at four scenes in this story of jumping the gun. And the first scene is Isaac and Esau prepare. Now, as a side note, we talked about this particular story in our B-side series, and you can find that on the slide at the beginning and afterwards. All right, it's already past the beginning is over. So afterwards, to listen to that, it was called The Deceiver that week. But we had the Isaac and Esau prepare. So here's the first scene, and I'm going to be reading this, a lot of reading here. I'm going to be reading this to you, and we'll just kind of have you follow along. I'll kind of walk through it a little bit. But it says in verse 1, one day when Isaac was old and turning blind, that's important, He called for Esau, his older son, or specifically his oldest son, which means, as part of that, and we said we talked about this already, but two things were a part of the oldest son. The oldest son got the birthright, which meant that they got the double portion of the inheritance. They got twice as much of the inheritance when dad died than everyone else. It meant that they were the one that was in charge of the family. They basically took the mantle of leadership of the family from dad when he died. And they were the decision maker. I mean, everything was tied into the birthright. And because of the oldest child, simply by birth, simply by being male firstborn in this culture. And as we talked about last week, Esau traded that up. But the second thing that the firstborn son received was the blessing. And the blessing was, it's kind of a spiritual thing. It's this idea of conveying God's promise to the next generation. And you'll see, actually, there's another story we're going to look at where Jacob gets blessed by someone else. But this idea of the blessing kind of says, okay, you know, not only do you have the physical things, but now you're going to have, like, the spiritual side of it. And I'll just leave it at that. There's a lot more of the complicated things. But in general, it means I'm going to have the firstborn. They're going to get the blessing. They're going to carry on the promises that God has made to our family. They're going to receive the God's presence with them, even though God is present with everyone. But that's kind of what the blessing was. And again, I don't have to get into too much more, but understand it's a big deal. But that's given specifically to the firstborn. So the birthright's already gone. Esau lost it. He traded it for a bowl of stew. So, context. So, he was turning blind. He called for Esau, his oldest son, and said, "My son." "Yes, father," Esau replied. "I am an old man now," Isaac said, "and I don't know when I may die. So take your bow and quiver full of arrows and go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare my favorite dish and bring it here for me to eat. And then I will pronounce the blessing that belongs to you, my firstborn son, before I die." And so this idea of the blessing goes to that. And there's an interesting phrase here. This says favorite dish, the NLT. The NIV says tasty food. I did try to do some research on, like, why is, because this phrase keeps coming up over and over. I want to prepare some tasty foods. And tasty food, tasty food, tasty food. The word means gourmet delicacy. It means something that Isaac really likes. I don't know. There's something about it that was unique. And so this idea of my favorite dish, and you'll see that theme over and over and over as we read this passage. But there's something about it. It's kind of like it was dad's jam. Like, that was the thing that he liked. And so if I was like, "Jack, my oldest son, I'm about to die. Prepare my favorite dish." He'll go, "All right, I'll get my Taco Bell gift card and I'll run down there right now." So that's kind of the idea here. And there's something about it. And maybe there's ceremony that's built into this. And we're going to have a special meal and then we're going to. Then he's going to provide the blessing. You know, sort of like we do special meals too. Hey, we're going to have people over, and then we're going to announce we're pregnant or something like that. And we're not pregnant. That would be like so many miracles of God would have to happen at this point. But that's what's going on. He says, we're going to prepare this meal. It's going to be my favorite meal. And then I'm going to give you this spiritual blessing before I die. So that's the preparation. That's the setting of scene one. That's what's happening in scene one. But then you go from Isaac and Esau prepare to Rebecca and Jacob plot. Now, Rebecca is Isaac's wife. And again, we talked about that a little bit, but there's a really crazy story about how Isaac found his wife, Rebecca. And then Jacob is the second twin, and Jacob's name means deceiver. That's why the title of the series is that. So this is the younger son, Jacob, and mom, and Isaac's wife. And they start to plot. And here's the interesting thing, and here's where we're talking about this jumping the gun idea. So in verse 5, it says, but Rebekah, so this whole story was happening, and Rebekah must have been in the other room in the tent, or wherever they were, in the yurt or the wigwam or whatever. But Rebekah overheard what Isaac said to his son Esau. So over here, Rebecca is hearing that. Now, that's important because the very first week of this series, 2 weeks ago, we talked about this promise that God made. And just to refresh you, this is the promise God made in Genesis 25, verse 23. It says, and the Lord told her, talking to Rebecca, this was before before Jacob and Esau were born. So they were in the womb, bouncing around, fighting. And before they were born, God said to Rebekah, the sons in your womb will become two nations. And again, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing, but hey, this is a big deal. Your family's going to be huge. From the very beginning, they're going to be rivals. Of course they are. Brothers are like that. One nation will be stronger than the other. Of course they are. The oldest brother, of course, is going to be the stronger one because that's the way it works. The older brother is the one that has the birthright and the blessing. And then he says, and your older son will serve your younger son. And so this was the promise that God made. to Rebecca when she was like, why are my boys fighting in my belly? And he's like, oh, let me tell you. And so this is that promise that God made. And so here she is in the other room hearing what Isaac was saying to Esau, going, oh, wait a second. Wait a second. God said that the younger, that the older was going to serve the younger. So that means that, that Jacob is the one that should be getting the blessing, because even though he's second born, God said that this is what's going to happen. And so Rebecca decides, well, if that was God's promise, I think I need to jump the gun here because I need to help God out. I need to make this work because God promises. So it's my job to make it happen. And you know, and we could have paused the story there and she could have been, she could have gone out and just prayed to the Lord. God, you made this promise to me about Jacob. You made this, you said this was going to happen, and I trust that everything you say is going to happen is going to come true. And God, why does this seem? And maybe God would have answered and said, Rebecca, it's okay, I've got this. Don't worry. It's all under my control. But that's not what she did. It says, but Rebecca, next slide, overheard what Isaac said to his son Esau. So when Esau left to hunt for the wild game, she said to her son Jacob, listen, I overheard your father say to Esau, bring me some wild game and prepare me a delicious meal. There's that phrase again. Then I will bless you in the Lord's presence before I die. Now, my son, she's talking to Jacob now. That's what she heard. Now, my son, Jacob, listen to me. Do exactly as I tell you. Go out to the flocks, meaning not go hunting. Go out to the flocks that we already have right here in-house. Okay? Go out to the flocks and bring me two fine young goats. I'll use them to prepare your father's favorite dish. He must love goatness. So he says, then take the food to your father so he can eat it and bless you before he dies. So Rebecca's going, okay, wait a second. We need to change the plan here. And even at this point, it could be fair to be like, hey, maybe Dad will show you favor. Bring in his dish and say, Dad, I cooked it faster. You know, maybe you'll give me the blessing instead. But that's not what happened. So the story goes on and says, but look, Jacob replied to Rebecca, my brother Esau is a hairy man. I get it. And my skin is smooth. What if my father touches me? He'll see that I'm trying to trick him, and then he'll curse me, which is the Hebrew word here, curse, literally means the opposite of blessing. It's like, instead of giving me good things from God, he's going to pray that God kills me. He's going to pray awful things on me from God. So he'll curse me instead of blessing me. But his mother replied, then let the curse fall on me, my son. Just do what I tell you. Go out and get the goats for me. So I know that happens. You hear that phrase in your house sometimes too. Come on, kids, go out and get the goats for me. Actually, maybe you do if you're a farmer. You know, maybe you have to go out and get the goats. I don't know. But she's like, you know, I realize that we're being deceptive here, Jacob. And let me worry about that. And so it goes on. So Jacob went out and got the young goats for his mother. Rebecca took them. Now, look at the things that Rebecca did in this. She's saying, okay, I'm going to make this happen. I'm going to make this plan, this promise that God brought. I'm going to make it happen. Rebecca took them and prepared a delicious meal, just the way Isaac liked it. Then she took Esau's favorite clothes. So she went into Esau's closet or his tent pole over on the corner, wherever he hung his robes and stuff. And she took his clothes, which were there in the house, and gave them to her younger son, Jacob. So she gave Esau Jacob's clothes. And I know that how that works. We had a dispute in our house. I'm not going to say who was disputing, but there was definitely a dispute over new deodorant. Deodorant we're disputing over. We're not even talking about their favorite clothes or things like that. And I know that favorite clothes are a big deal, but she went and got the favorite clothes and brought them and said, here, you wear Esau's favorite outfit. Then she covered his arms and the smooth part of his neck with the skin of the young goats. And so the goat skin was covered to make his arms feel hairy. Then she gave Jacob the delicious meal, including freshly baked bread, of course, because what good meal, you know, is really good if you add bread to it, because carbs are the way to go. Anyway, so that's the story here. So Rebecca's going, okay, God had this promise, made this promise. I remember that promise. It's been a long time. Remember, this was before they were even born. They were in the womb. And so, you know, what are we looking at? 60 years later? 80 years later? I don't know. But it's a long time. And Rebecca's going, well, God hasn't done it yet, but he promised, so it's my job to make it happen. And And so now she's taking that step and bringing Jacob in on it. And you're like, oh, poor Jacob. Poor Jacob. Well, let's continue to read the story. So as Isaac and Esau prepare, then the second scene is Rebekah and Jacob plot. The third scene is Isaac and Jacob pretends. So the comma's there, right? So Isaac isn't pretending, but Jacob is pretending. And so it goes on in verse 18. It says, so Jacob took the food to his father. My father, he said, oh, I got to catch up on my notes here. I'm getting all excited. My father, he said, yes, my son, Isaac answered. Now let's stop there. Right up until this point, you know, mom said to wear the goats, and okay, I'll wear the goats. And mom gave me his clothes, so it's not really on me. It's mom made me do that. And then Isaac answered, who are you, Esau or Jacob? And I think it's important for us to recognize here that Jacob had multiple chances to come clean about this. So before we're like, oh, it's all Rebecca's fault, before we go all Adam, like, oh, God, it was the woman you gave me, she made me do this. Before we got Adam and Eve, you know, that's that story. Okay. Anyway, he's like, no. Jacob was very involved in this. Because he says, Isaac answered, who are you, Esau or Jacob? Jacob replied, it's Esau, your firstborn son. I've done as you told me. Here's the wild game, which wasn't wild because he pulled it out of his own flock. Now sit up and eat it so you can give me your blessing. I mean, it's kind of like, now shut up and give me your blessing. Eat this fruit. You know, because it's time. Like, I don't know if that was happening, but you'll see in a moment. Time was kind of the essence, but that's me just adding to the story. Isaac asked, how did you find it so quickly, my son? And like now, Jacob, like Jacob's getting into some like dangerous territory. He's like, well, the Lord your God put it in my path, Jacob replied. Like, oh, Jacob, you don't have to do that. You don't bring God into this. You're already cheating. You're already deceiving. You're already lying to your dad on his deathbed, or at least close to it. And now you're going to be like, bring God into this? Not cool, Jacob. So then it goes on and says, then Isaac said to Jacob, come closer so I can touch you and make sure you're really Esau. So obviously, Isaac's kind of skeptical here. He's like, oh, no, man. You sure? Well, we'll see in a second. He doesn't even sound like him. And so Jacob went closer to his father, and Isaac touched him. The voice is Jacob's. He's like, I recognize your voice. But the hands are Esau's. You're definitely hairy like Esau, Isaac said. But he did not recognize Jacob because Jacob's hands felt hairy just like Esau's. So Isaac prepared to bless Jacob. So he's getting ready. He's like, okay, I mean, you clearly are the firstborn son, and clearly you're the one. So let's bless you. But wait a second, though. Are you really my son, Esau? Like, another chance for Jacob to come clean. He asked, yes, I am, Jacob replied. And it has a feel there of Peter. When God said, you know, you're going to deny me three times. He's like, no, I won't. I'm never going to do that. And they're like, weren't you with him? No, I wasn't. I wasn't with Jesus. I don't even know the man. So, I don't know, maybe a rooster crowed somewhere in the world at that moment. But that's not tied to this story. But anyway, then he says, then Isaac said, now, my son, bring me the wild game. Let me eat it. And then I will give you my blessing. So Jacob took the food to his father and Isaac ate it. He also drank the wine that Jacob served him. Then Isaac said to Jacob, and Isaac's still like, I don't know. Then Isaac said to Jacob, please come a little closer and kiss me, my son. He's like, because I know Jacob, Andy Stanley talked about this last week. I know Jacob's kind of a mama's boy. He kind of stays at home and does all the cooking and cleaning maybe. But Esau, he's always out in the fields. He's always out hunting. And he's got a funk. Like, Esau stank. That, we know that about Esau. Like, hey, you're hairy. We love you. Thank you, brother. But, dude, you need to get into a fight with your brother over deodorant. Like, it is pretty rough. So he's like, I know what I'll do. I'll have Jacob kiss me, because when he gets close, everybody's going to know right away. So Jacob went over and kissed him. And when Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, because they didn't have washing machines back then, he was finally convinced. And he blessed his son. So he's like, okay, all these opportunities for Jacob to come clean. And so Isaac blesses him. And this is the blessing. He says, ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of the outdoors, which the Lord has blessed. That's quite a... You're being too kind, Isaac. Like, you reek. You are really bad. I'm vomiting in my mouth right now because it's so bad. But hey, you love the outdoors, and God has blessed the outdoors. So we're going to take a positive spin on it. He says, from the dew of heaven and the richness of the earth, may God always give you abundant harvests of grain and bountiful new wine. May many nations become your servants, and may they bow down to you. Excuse me. May you be the master over your brothers. What? And may your mother's sons bow down to you. All who curse you will be cursed, and all who bless you will be blessed. And that last part is actually aligned to the promise that God made to Isaac's father, Abraham, that all the nations will be blessed. Those who bless you will be blessed. Those who curse you will be cursed. So the blessing is given, and basically Jacob is told by his dad, you know what? May your brothers and sisters, may you be the head of the family. May God provide for you in amazing ways. May you have a tremendous harvest. May all of these things go to you as I pass them on to you through God as the head of the household. And again, it's kind of a spiritual moment there. It's a unique thing. So Isaac and Esau prepare. Then Rebekah and Jacob plot. Then Isaac and Jacob pretend. And then you've got Isaac and Esau's pain in the fourth scene here. So as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and almost before Jacob had left his father, so see there's a little, like, whoop, he goes out of the door, the other guy comes in. Esau returned from his hunt. Esau prepared a delicious meal, there's that phrase again, and brought it to his father. He says, sit up, my father, and eat my wild game so that you can give me your blessing. But Isaac asked him, wait, who are you? Because remember, he was blind. You guys remember that from the very beginning? He was blind. Who are you? Esau replied, it's your son, your firstborn son, Esau. And it says, Isaac began to tremble uncontrollably. And that moment there, I don't know if Jacob was nearby or not, but like to watch your dad break down because you deceived him, like that just seems harsh. It seems rough. And he began to tremble uncontrollably and said, then who just served me wild game? I've already eaten and I blessed him just before you came. And yes, that blessing must stand. And again, there's a cultural piece to all this. Like, why can't he change it? Like, that's the way it went. That's how it was. Once that blessing was given, that's the way it worked. And so it says, when Esau heard his father's words, he let out a loud and bitter cry. Oh, my father, what about me? Bless me too, he begged. But Isaac said, your brother was here, and he tricked me. He has taken away your blessing. And this is the verse that is the focus verse for this passage. It says, Esau exclaimed, no wonder his name is Jacob, which means, Yaakov, means to deceive or to grasp someone's heel or to try to take their place. For now he has cheated me twice. First he took my rights as the firstborn, which you had a big part in, Esau. You traded it, okay, buddy? And now he has stolen my blessing. Oh, haven't you saved even one blessing for me? And so the deceiver lives up to his name. And so the story goes on and says, Isaac said to Esau, I have made Jacob your master, and I have declared that all his brothers will be his servants. I have guaranteed him an abundance of grain and wine. What is left for me to give you, my son? Esau pleaded, but do you only have one blessing? Oh, my father, please bless me too. Then Esau broke down and wept, crying, God, Isaac, Dad, please, something. Finally, his father Isaac said to him, and this is it, like the blessing, this is a blessing, because he can't bless Esau with what he already blessed Jacob with. So he kind of comes up with some other pieces, and it's a blessing, it's not the best. He says, you're going to live away from the richness of this earth and away from the dew of the heaven above, meaning you're going to be in the desert. You're going to be in a dry area. You will live by your sword. You're always going to be fighting. And you will serve your brother. Like, thanks, Dad. Should have kept my mouth shut. But when you decide to break free, you will shake his yoke from your neck. So there's going to be a point where there's going to be a big fight. And you're going to be able to kind of kick him out. You're not going to be in charge, but you're going to be able to kind of separate from him. And we're going to talk more about that in the future weeks of this series. But that's the four scenes here of this jumping the gun. And all four scenes with Isaac and Esau prepare, Rebekah and Jacob plot, Isaac and Jacob pretends, Isaac and Esau's pain. And this whole thing was found upon Rebecca saying, well, God made this promise and he hasn't come through yet, so I guess it's my job to step in and make it happen. It's my job to do it. And of course, she lied, she cheated, she deceived. Jacob brought her son in on it. Jacob was all part of it as well. Cheated, deceived his dad, stole from his brother. And And we find out, and we're going to talk about this more next week, but Jacob ends up having to run for his life now because his brother was mad. And Jacob spends a long time wandering. He ends up getting tricked by family members the way he tricked other people. He never sees his mom again after this moment because he had to flee, and she dies while he's gone. And then you'll find out later, which we're not really going to talk about, but when you get into the story of the 12 sons of Jacob, also known as the 12 sons of Israel, they're cheaters too. And they're like, hey, we learned it from you, Dad. You know what we're going to do? We're going to sell one of our brothers into slavery and then coat his robe, rip it up, put blood on it, and pretend that he was killed. And so Jacob, like all these consequences because of their unwillingness to wait on God. Because if God makes a promise, he's going to come through. He's going to come through. If God says it, it will happen. If I know one thing, our God is a deliverer. He will see us through. He's going to do that. So God's purposes aren't excuses for our disobedience. We can't go, God made that, and so he promised me, and I know that I need to wait for the gun, but I'm just going to move ahead. But if you move ahead, you're going to get disqualified for that race. You're going to miss out on what God really wants to do there. You're going to have to deal with the consequences of your sin. So let's not use his purposes as excuses. We talked about this during a long time ago during the Strong series on the life of Daniel. And the point that week was that the ends do not justify the means. Just because something is good, the end is going to be a good thing, doesn't mean we can sin to get there. We are not to disobey. We are not to break God's commands. We are not to cheat and lie to other people just because God promised. And I don't mean to put quotes on that. I mean, God did promise. He's going to come through. But our perspective is it didn't come through according to our timetable. So I want to just take the last 45 minutes to an hour. No, I'm just kidding. The football doesn't even start till like 3:30 today. So anyway, I want to take the last couple of minutes just to talk about what about you and me? Because I think, you know, maybe you're brand new to following Jesus. Maybe you don't even follow Jesus. You're not quite sure about this church, this Jesus thing. And that's cool. But for the rest of you, You probably are familiar with some of the things that God has promised. And you know some of the big picture things about God willing to provide. He's going to provide for your needs. And that God cares about you and all these things. But often we look and go, but God said that, but it didn't happen yet. And so we kind of feel like we need to take matters into our own hands. We need to kind of make it happen. And I just want to, because God's purposes aren't excuses for our disobedience, I just want to challenge you with a couple of thoughts. Because when you're tempted to jump the gun, there's some things I want you to consider. Before you're getting ready to go, you know what? You know what? You know what? I can make this happen. And when you jump before that gun, you get the double gun, bang, bang. And then you lose the race. Before you do that, I'd like you to pause and consider a couple of things. Because it's easy to go, okay, God didn't show up according to my timetable. God didn't show up according to my plan. And we did a whole series called Objects in the Mirror, and again, that's on the slide as well, where we looked at how in the whole title is Objects in the Mirror Appear Closer. Let's see. Objects in the Mirror Appear Closer Than They Are. And the idea that sometimes things like, oh, no, this is awful, this is awful, this is awful. I'm like, no. When you look back, you realize, no, wait, God had it all under control. And so if you're in that spot where you're tempted to jump the gun, before you disobey, before you do that, just remember these things. The first thing is remember that God doesn't operate in our time. And see, we look at time and we're like, okay, God made this promise. And of course, we're Americans in the 21st century. Like, this morning, half of this building turned on automatically. Like, we don't wait for things. We got a new microwave for Christmas. And it's even faster than the old microwave. Like, we're instant. We want it now. We have drive-through. When we go to Jersey Mike's on the second day after opening, we wonder, why do I have to stand in line for my pre-ordered because there's a huge line? I want it now. I want it now. I want it now. It's pretty good, though. But, like, that's the way we work as Americans. And we're like, but God, why don't you come through now? Just remember, he doesn't operate on our time. He does not work that way. In Peter, 2 Peter chapter 3, Peter says this. He says, do not forget this one thing. Don't forget this one thing. Dear friends, with the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years. And 1,000 years are like a day. So like when we look at time, we're like, oh, I mean, we're looking now. We got 6 minutes till 11:30. He better be done by then. Because that's the way it works. But But to God, like, God doesn't see time the way we do. He's not in our time. He's not bound by time. What we go is like, oh, that was a whole day. God's like, oh, that was 1,000 years. Like, he doesn't operate that way. And Peter goes on and says, the Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. So from our perspective, we're like, come on, God, why didn't you come through? You're late. You're late. And just like Gandalf, God never is late. He always arrives precisely when he means to. Precisely on time. And so we're like, but God, you're late, you're late. So we're like, no, I know you're late. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to jump in and I'm going to make it happen. But that's not the way God works. We call it slow, and God's like, this isn't slow. This is my plan. This is my timing. Who do you think you are? I've got this. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. And here Peter is talking about kind of the end. Like, are things going to get any worse? When is Jesus returning? And Peter's like, just chill. God's going to come back at just the right time. And that's the way it works. You see, we measure time by seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, and years. But that's not how God measures time. He measures it according to his plan and to his timing and to his purposes. God doesn't fit into our time. He works when it's exactly right and exactly best for us. So before you're tempted to jump, just remember he doesn't work that way. And it's sort of like this. We're getting ready. Next month, we're taking a week off, and Kendra and I are going away for the weekend, Valentine's Day weekend, to D.C., and we go to this hotel. We love it because it's right near the metro station. And we take the metro into downtown and do all the museums and do all that stuff. And actually, just a couple of years ago, you know, I'm a little organized this way. And I make sure I have the train schedule and what the times are and all that. And I found an interesting thing that if you go online and just Google a schedule, it doesn't mean it's the schedule for 2024. It could be a schedule from 2017. It could be a schedule from whatever. And so it's almost like when it comes to us and God, we've got this schedule from 2017 and looking and saying that train is supposed to arrive at 10:20 in the morning and it's 10:30 and the train isn't here. We're like, what is wrong with these train people? The schedule says 10:20 and it's 10 minutes late. And somebody's like, oh, you got the wrong schedule. Look at this schedule, the correct schedule for 2024. That train's going to be here at 10:35. It's actually 5 minutes. You have 5 minutes to wait. And that's the way it comes with us and God. We're like, God, I want you to work on my timetable. And God's like, I don't work that way. I'm going to come exactly when you need me to. So we look at things and we're like, oh, it's not going to work. Or God's late. And just remember, before you're tempted to jump the gun, before you're tempted to disqualify yourself from that race, remember that God doesn't operate on our time. He doesn't work that way. And it doesn't make it easier. It doesn't make it like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it now because I understand quantum physics or the space-time continuum or all that. And, of course, the Avengers Endgame said time travel doesn't work that way. So they just solved all the questions about time travel just by making an excuse. But we look at God and go, I don't get it. And God says, I've got it. Just trust me before you jump the gun. The second thing is before you disobey, remember that God's delay isn't a lack of ability. See, sometimes God doesn't come through the way we expect and we think it's because he can't. Oh, I know why that didn't happen. I know why they never got better. I know why my marriage didn't get resolved. I know why I didn't pass that test. I know because God can't even do this. God can't even fix this problem. And we think he can't. And just understand that the delay does not mean lack of ability. And there's this cool passage you're probably familiar with. Even if you didn't grow up in church, you're probably familiar with this passage, but maybe never looked at it this way because I didn't really look at it this way until now. But this is in the Garden of Gethsemane. This is the night Jesus is getting betrayed. He's getting ready to be crucified. He's going to go through trials all night. We did a series called Trials about those trials. Getting ready to be tried, and then he's going to be crucified on the cross. And by, you know, basically within 24 hours, he's going to be in the grave. And so this is right at the moment where Judas comes up and kisses him to betray him with a kiss. And so Jesus says to them, this is in the garden there. He's with his followers. Jesus says, my friend, talking to Judas, go ahead and do what you have come for. It says, then the others, the Roman soldiers that were there, grabbed Jesus and arrested him. But one of the men with Jesus, which we find out over in Luke that man was Peter. One of the men with Jesus pulled out his sword and struck the high priest's slave, slashing off his ear. And we remember that. Yeah, Peter, you give it to him. They're not going to take my Jesus. And we find out also in another passage that Jesus even healed his ear. But this is what Jesus said, and this is what's wild. He says, put away your sword. We remember that. Okay. Those who use the sword will die by the sword. Yeah, okay. So if you're violent, people are going to be violent back to you. I get it. Peter, just chill, yo. Just calm down. calm down with the violence. But then this is the part that was so incredible that you know, especially if you grew up in like conservative church like that, there's this song, but he could have called 10,000 angels. But he says, don't you realize, Peter, don't you realize that I could ask my Father for thousands of angels to protect us and he would send them instantly? Peter, don't you get it? This is not a lack of my power. If I asked God right now, 10,000 angels would come and boom, they'd be down, we'd be doing whatever we want to do. He said, don't think that I don't have the ability to stop this. But he goes on and says, but if I did stop this, how would the scriptures be fulfilled that describe what must happen now? And in your prime groups, you're going to have a chance to discuss this point this week. And that's one of the questions. Like, I'm not going to answer that for you, but just consider, what if Peter had succeeded? What if Peter stopped Jesus' arrest? What would be the ramifications? What would be the consequences of that for us today? If Peter succeeded, now granted, God is in control and he would never have let that happen. But we think through that, like, okay, is this a lack of God's ability? Not at all. God could bring 1,000 angels right now in this moment. But his delay is because he's got something in mind. Because for us, we needed Jesus to be arrested. We needed Jesus to be tried and be crucified on the cross. Or we'd have no hope. And to be resurrected as well. So before you disobey, just don't think that God can't, that God isn't able to help you with that. We talked about this during Extras. It's really interesting. The Extras Part 2 series, that's also on the slide. Jesus was talking to Herod. Was he talking to Herod at that point? Or was it? Yeah, he was talking to Herod. And I think it was Herod. It's either Herod or Pilate. and he's like, and they were like, oh, Jesus, don't you know I have the power to have you killed or to set you free? And Jesus is like, you ain't got no power. The only power you have is because God has given it to you. So even in that moment, Jesus recognized and declared that he's the one in control. And we need to remember that. He's got the power. His lack of timing, his delay doesn't mean he can't do it. It means he's choosing not to. So but before you're getting ready to jump the gun and say, no, I need to make this happen because God isn't coming through or God can't come through, remember that his delay is not a lack of ability. If he chooses not to, it's for a bigger purpose, even when it doesn't make sense to us. So before you disobey, remember, God doesn't operate in our time. Remember that God's delay isn't a lack of ability. And finally, remember, God deeply, deeply cares about you. And sometimes we get to a spot where God doesn't come through and maybe we think we can't. Maybe we just think he won't. Why would he come through for me? Who am I? Why would he care about me? I'm a nobody. I'm a loser. I keep screwing up. I never get it right. I don't deserve this. And those are all true. We don't. But God cares deeply about us. Over in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says, are not two sparrows, this is Jesus speaking, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? He's like sparrows, like, come on, guys, we know they're cheap. A penny, you can get a couple of sparrows because, you know, that's normal. He says, yet not one of them will fall to the ground outside of your Father's care. Something so cheap as a sparrow that's kind of valueless, if you will, even that can't die without God knowing about it. It can't fall to the ground without God being aware of every piece of it. Every situation. Jesus goes on and says, and even the very hairs on your head are all numbered. God knows everything about you, even the hairs on your head, or the lack thereof. And some of us are Esau, and you think there's no hair on their head, but there's a lot of other hair, and God is doing a lot of counting. But the point is that God knows every detail, even the very hairs on your head are numbered. And so Jesus says, so don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You are worth more than many sparrows. You are incredibly valuable in the sight of God. He knows you intimately, deeply. And a stupid bird can die, and he'll be like, yep, I knew about that. And he knows you far more than that. So when you're at the line going, God doesn't come through because he doesn't care about me. Oh, no, no. He absolutely does. And let me just say this. Maybe the reason he's not moving is because he cares about you. Maybe his timing, his plan has something bigger than what we want. Something better for us than what we had in mind. Paul says that God can do more than we can ever ask or imagine. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. So before we get caught up and think that we don't matter, God knows everything about you. Psalm 139, David records the fact that God knit us together in our mother's womb. He knows our thoughts. He knows everything about us and cares about us deeply. So when you're at that spot going, God didn't come through, He doesn't care. No, He does. Maybe He hasn't come through yet. Or not maybe. He hasn't come through yet because He's got a plan. And we need to trust Him for that. So before you jump the gun, before you disobey God, remember, God doesn't operate in our time. He works on His own timetable, which is better. God's delay isn't a lack of ability. Nothing is because God can't. It's because He chooses to wait. And finally, God deeply cares about you. So whenever you're at that moment, you're at the starting line and you see this did not come, remember, God's purposes aren't excuses for our disobedience. This is not a chance for us to jump in like Rebecca and Jacob and be like, oh, well, I'm going to make God's plan happen. Trust God's timing, because He will always come through. He will always keep His promises, and He loves you deeply. Let's pray. Father, thank You so much for Your word. Thank You. Thank You for the example that we can learn from with Jacob and Rebecca, and the deception there, and the desire to make Your plan happen. And God, thank You that Your plans are so much greater than ours. And that we think we know what's best for us. And You do know what's best for us. So we're in those moments where it seems like You haven't come through at the right time. You haven't come through when we want to or the way we want You to. Help us to step back and not disobey, not jump the gun. And just remember that You operate on a different time schedule. You operate on the best time schedule. And that You have the ability to solve any problem. And if You don't, there's a reason. And that You love us deeply. And God, if we know one thing, our God is a deliverer. You are a deliverer. You're going to see us through. And so we trust You for that. And God, help us in that faith. Because this is not easy. This isn't fun. This isn't comfortable. But help us to not jump the gun and trust You. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.